Everyone, welcome. This is Sydney Craig-Hart of EATOVA.com, and today we are discussing the top five mistakes that most new VAs make. I want to thank you all for being here and congratulate you on investing in a program to continue to improve yourself and your business. This is really crucial to your development, and I have found this to be the case for myself as well. I continue to invest in marketing programs and coaching and information, and you'll see how it can benefit you and your business as well, as long as you continue to learn and implement what you learn. So today we would like to welcome our special guest, Lee Marshall. Lee is the owner of Greased Will Virtual Assistants, and she, after receiving a Bachelor of Science degree in education, spent more than 12 years working in the insurance industry. And she also spent time at a company called EDS as the manager of a startup claim processing operation. But her entry into the virtual assistance world started while she was at EDS. She and her husband found themselves expecting twin boys, and Lee at that time decided to make the transition to life at home. So once her boys gained some independence, she decided she wanted to create a career that would combine the flexibility of a home-based business with the satisfaction of being able to use and build upon her extensive experience. And that's when Greased Will Virtual Assistants was born. She then completed the intense virtual training program offered by Assist You, and since then she's been working to build her practice, gaining additional skills and experiences, partnering with her clients, and making their success her number one goal. Lee has since returned to Assist You to successfully achieve the designation of Certified Professional Virtual Assistant, which she achieved in 2006, and in 2008 she achieved the Certified Master Virtual Assistant Award. So we'd like to thank her and welcome her to the call today. And as we mentioned, Lee, we're talking about the five biggest mistakes that most new VAs make. And you've been in this industry for a while and seen and worked with a lot of VAs. So what's your take on that? What do you think VAs miss, or where do you think they go wrong?
Well, I think that just to hit on the five separate topics, it would be being apprehensive about doing thorough interviewing of prospective clients and getting a little too excited when you first start out that maybe any client is better than no client. Mm-hmm. In that same respect, getting so excited about talking to a prospective client that you don't fully complete the interview process.
Right. I remember that I made that mistake very early on, and it really did come back to bite me. So I can certainly vouch for the fact that those two aspects of the interview process, or being new in particular, can really make your starting a virtual assistant business a little more difficult than it needs to be.
Certainly. I think that new VAs approach prospective clients and they feel a little apprehensive about maybe pushing and asking for a more detailed explanation than you might get the first time you ask a question. The need to get in there and break it down and really get to know somebody so that you can assess whether or not you may be a good fit.
Right, that is really important, and I know I've developed through trial and error my kind of system for how I process new potential clients and the steps that I take them through, but it's still a work in progress for me. So I don't know if that's the case for you, but what have you found works really well for you in terms of being thorough with your interviewing? Do you have a set list of questions you ask, or do you only focus on certain types of clients? What's your process for making sure that you do a thorough job with that?
Well, in many respects, I've been very fortunate in that the majority of my clients have come to me through personal referrals. Mm-hmm. So I had an idea of who the prospective client was, what they were doing, and, you know, what they were really about. It was more a matter of getting to know about personality fit, a personal fit versus the business fit, because I think they're both two very important aspects of the interview process. You need to get to know who this person is, what their business is, what are they doing, how do they do it, are their standards and practices and level of ethics in line with your own. And some of that crosses over. It's a little fuzzy in between business and personal. But then you need to get to know the person themselves. Who are they? How do they react in bad situations? How do they react in good situations? What I have found through just getting to know my clients is that you do need to go back and have more than one conversation.
Right.
You get really excited after the first one and you go, okay, let's go. But it's really a good idea, and I know many senior VAs will often not make a decision until they've had 2 to 3 minimum 60-minute conversations with someone before they'll make a decision.
Right, that's definitely recommended. And I think one of the key things you mentioned in really finding out what type of person they are and learning as much as you can about their personality and particularly their communication style, I have found in my experience and in talking with other VAs that a lot of times that's where the disconnect happens, in just the way that two people communicate and there being assumptions on either side and then unfulfilled expectations. And a lot of times that can be avoided up front if you really take the time to understand how a person best communicates and just what kind of personality they have. Are they really sensitive or are they really assertive and so forth? Would you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely would. You had mentioned setting a certain level of expectation. I have found, not only as a VA but throughout my entire business career, that if you do leave, you make assumptions about what the other person knows, doesn't know, or thinks, without saying, you know, spelling out specifically how you like to work, what's going to happen, what the next steps are, you're leaving the door open for them to set their own level of expectation, which may or may not be where reality is,
right.
And that's where disappointment comes in.
Exactly, exactly. And it really will, even if you're able to overcome it, it's really a bad way to start out a partnership, and it in many cases can undermine the entire relationship, and you end up ending on sometimes not the best terms. So it just really highlights the fact of how important it is to take your time up front. And what do you feel like new VAs can do to avoid that feeling of, or rather overcome the feeling of, taking on any client is better than no client? I think all of us when we were new felt that way just because we were anxious to get started and someone was interested and we finally got to use what we'd learned and that person may not have been a good fit. How would you say that a new person could overcome that type of obstacle?
I think it's really almost a leap of faith. You have to beforehand be very prepared, think about the things that you want to ask and the things that you want to know about a prospective client, and then go ahead and, I'm sorry, Cindy.
That's okay.
Sydney, I'm sorry about that. I have a visitor. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
My question was, how do you think a new VA can overcome that feeling of taking on any client, because any client is better than no client?
Okay, and again, I do think that it's being prepared for the conversation is very important, thinking about exactly what your standards are going to be, and then you do have to take a leap of faith and just, even though you've got the butterflies in your stomach, you've got to stick to that and really believe in the whole concept of abundance and that it really is not a win-win if you're not working with the ideal client. It's not good for you and it's not good for them.
Right, exactly. And I think, too, just really being confident in your abilities and your skill set and the training that you've invested in, it's a very different mindset from being a business owner and a virtual assistant than it is from being an employee, which most of our listeners, that's their background, that they've been in the corporate world for some time and they are very good at what they do, but they're used to someone else dictating their responsibilities and dictating you know, how they work and how they carry out their projects and so forth. So it is kind of a mental shift and learning how to be a confident business owner and really feeling, you know, good about the decision you've made and the choice you've made to start a practice of your own and start a business and work with other entrepreneurs and that you do have something really valuable to share. I think that would help, too, in not just feeling like any client that comes along would be a good fit, but really looking for those who you are meant to serve and best able to work with.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, another thing you mentioned was new VAs charging too little. How have you seen that impact a new VA in her practice?
I probably am someone who's experienced that. When I was first considering going into virtual assistants, I was fortunate enough to be friends with, on a personal level, with Dawn Goldberg.
Mm.
And I met her when she was going through the virtual training program, and kind of watched her go through that and start up her practice. And I, when I decided to investigate virtual assistants, I asked her, you know, one of my fears was, because I had come from an industry that was not necessarily, I did not come from an administrative background, I wondered, well, what can I do for people?
Right.
So as I went through the virtual training program, one of my personal fears was that, you know, surely others may have more skill, so because I'm coming to this kind of from a different direction,
right,
with a newness, that, you know, my skills might not be as valuable as others. And certainly that is not true. You, again, you have to really believe that you've been given the tools, that you have the experience, and you've been given the tools and everything you need to be valuable to your clients.
Right, that's really true. And just, you know, the administrative field is an interesting one in that it's one that most people have done on some level in their career, even if they didn't have that title or didn't realize what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us, if not in our careers, certainly in our personal life, you know, in the management of a household and just paying bills and, you know, perhaps buying a home or renovating a home or whatever, there's a lot of administrative and kind of project management work that goes along with it. So I think for a person like yourself or even someone with maybe not as extensive as an administrative background, to not underestimate all of the skills that you have. And one of the things that we recommend is that people who are considering becoming a VA or even new VAs really take inventory of all of their skill sets, all of the positions that they've held, all of the different companies that they've worked for, and really kind of outline all of the different tasks they've done. And in that way, you'd really be amazed at, you know, the depth of experience that you do have and how many of those skills or projects you're able to handle for someone else. So, and sticking on that topic of not charging too little, how were you able to overcome that apprehension, and how did you go about setting your fee structure and feeling comfortable in communicating that to your potential clients?
You know, one of the pitfalls of not charging enough is that as you continue in your practice, you gain more experience and confidence. You know, I was able to, as the next client came along, ask for substantially more.
Mm-hmm.
But again, one of the pitfalls is then you've got a huge disparity often between your two clients. So,
exactly.
I mean, that is a problem, but you do, I relied upon another virtual assistant within the Assist You community who kind of, she told me a story about how she was, she had someone who often works or is able to meet with her clients face-to-face. So she was sitting there in front of a panel of several people that she was considering working with, and she said, when they asked, well, and what is your rate? And she said, $95 an hour. And she said, you know, it came right out of my mouth, and it sounded great, but inside I was, you know, pretty like, wow, I can't believe I just said that.
Right.
And I was able to take inspiration from that. And just remember, once again, that you do have the skills, experience, and tools that you need to do to make a successful business. And that means charging for what you, the value that you bring to a partnership with a client.
Right. I think that's really important. I remember having a similar experience and, you know, feeling pretty comfortable about the rate that I set when I first started and then steadily increasing it from there. But oftentimes when I did think about increasing it, I'd have these, you know, butterflies in my stomach and, like, I can't say that number out loud, you know. And it took a lot of mustering up on my part and with my business partner who helped me to overcome those feelings. And it's interesting because I tend to think that I am a pretty confident person and don't have any problems with being assertive, but even with my personality, it was really something I had to overcome because, again, most, you know, people who do the kind of work we do in a corporate environment just aren't going to be charging what we charge hourly or making that kind of money. But I think another good point to hit on, too, is really the pitfalls of not just how it affects your relationship with your clients, but we start these businesses to be in business, and we all go into business to make money. We're not starting nonprofit organizations, so you really have to be cognizant of making sure of the amount that you need to make to cover your business expenses and your profit and and really run a business and not worry so much about that number and how it's reflected, you know, from your clients, but how it really turns around and affects you. And I think that's an easier place to come from and a different perspective to look at that may help some people to get over that hump.
And I also think it does circle back around to choosing, you know, the ideal client to work with as well.
Right.
Because when you do find the right client, they do see their value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And because more and more entrepreneurs and small business owners are becoming familiar with virtual assistants, they are more familiar with the fee structures that are common. They're really familiar with the skill sets. And so, you know, for instance, if someone wanted to charge $50 an hour, that is certainly not an astronomical amount of money. That's actually probably closer to average or maybe even the lower end of average. So just wrapping your head around, you know, the fact that throwing out whatever number works for you is probably not uncommon in the industry or uncommon to your clients, even if it's uncommon in your brain, is a nice thing to remember and not hold yourself back because you're afraid of what a client might say or they might think that's too much or they may think, you know, you're trying to rip them off or something. You really just have to understand, you know, how the industry has developed over the last few years and where it's going and what potential clients are expecting to pay. Now, that leads us to our next point about a new VA not raising her rates in a timely manner. What's your take on that? How have you found that to have a negative impact, and how do you think that could be avoided?
Well, I think that raising rates in a regular manner, once again, sets that level of expectation.
Right.
You know, if you let it go, oh, you know, there. It's easy to sometimes... I don't want to say feel sorry for your client, but every now and then everybody, maybe business is slow for your client, and you might say, well, this is a bad time.
Right.
And then the longer you put it off, the harder and harder it is to do, and that level of expectation of, you know, why are you raising rates now may create disappointment or some sort of static.
Right.
So if you do get into the habit of raising them regularly, you know, I've done it two different ways, just saying that, you know, at X date, my new rate will be Y. And I've also, because I had my very first client, there was such a disparity because I really started out too low.
Right.
I have done stages. I'll say, you know, on April 1st, it's going to be X. And then rather than raising it $10 or $15 an hour all at one shot, you know, maybe every other month or every few months, I raise it like by a $5 increment just so that they know eventually this is where it's going to get. So there's lots of ways to do it. I mean, it's very personal.
Right. Yes, it definitely is. And, again, I think that's the place coming from, well, I feel sorry for them. You know, they haven't generated the money they wanted to generate or their business is slow. And we, especially being as women, I think we tend to take that on. And, you know, we always want to help and accommodate. And it's really just putting yourself in a bad position when you do that in terms of your rates. I, too, have done what you have done, you know, had one client that was way lower than everybody else and staggered it. Or in some cases, even with my very first client, I raised her rate every couple, maybe every 6 months, I think. But she never has been at the level that my other clients have been at. And sometimes that's just okay, you know, if you have the one who's kind of left over from your original fee structure. But I think getting your clients into the habit of that, you know, you regularly raise your rates typically once a year is a really good practice to get into because everything else in our lives goes up once a year. At least once a year. We're fortunate if it's only once a year. You know, we think about our utilities and the professional services that we engage in, doctors and lawyers and so forth, and no one sets their just rates at one place and never increases them. So it's just really important to be cognizant of that and plan ahead for it so that you don't drop it on your clients. Like you mentioned, you can send them a note and just say, you know, on this particular date, the rate is going up and we appreciate your business and with no explanation needed. Have you found it difficult in your experience or with other VAs just in this one area to feel the need of having to give an explanation about why you're doing it?
I think that many, it might be inherent to, again, maybe women, but you may feel compelled to, yes, this is why. But I'll be honest, I have not. It's really just been along the lines of it's time. it's time to raise rates, and this is what it's going to be, this is when it's going to happen. And I've never received any pushback.
Right. Yeah, I haven't either, and I'm glad to say that I, too, like you, haven't felt the need to give an explanation. But in some cases where people do, I think it's good to remember that it is your business and you're entitled to run it the way that you want to run it, and that you don't have to give an explanation to your clients. And I think it actually would do more harm than good if a VA gave an explanation, because it would feel like you were asking permission. And I think it's very important to not give the client that much power over you and over your business, but just to make your decision and simply state the fact and move on from it. And you, once you've done it once or twice, it really becomes not that big of a deal. You know, you plan it out maybe 3 or 4 months in advance, you send your notice, and you go on about your business. So for those who may find that challenging, there are ways to overcome that and to work around it. So just to recap kind of your five top mistakes and how we can overcome them. The first one you mentioned was being apprehensive about thorough interviewing, which was great advice that you gave, to really take your time and to get to know a prospective client's personality and their business and communication style, and really figure out if you guys can work together and how to best tackle that. And then, two, not getting too excited about what may be a great client and not fully complete the interview process. And I know that especially in the assisted community, it's really recommended and almost the best practice that we do 2 or 3 rounds of interviews, just to really take our time and get all the questions answered. And not to feel like, as number three, when you're first starting out, that any new client is better than no client. That's certainly not the case, and we all want to be looking for our ideal clients. So knowing that we're prepared and have really invested the time to get to know this person, we can take that leap of faith and know whether or not they're a good client for us and go ahead and proceed, or if they're not, to feel really okay with saying, you know what, I'm not the right VA for you, but let me refer you to someone else who can help you. We certainly, as number four, don't want to be charging too little, setting ourselves up for not really making the profit that we can make and just undermining our business and our industry. And then number five, being sure to raise our rates in a timely manner. And there's really easy ways to do that. I know once students graduate from AssistU's VTP, they're able to take advantage of Stacy's class, which is specific to raising fees. And I haven't taken it personally, but I've heard great things about it, and I'm sure you have as well.
Yes.
And she actually walks you through step by step how to do that. And it's not a horrible, scary thing like some people may think it may be. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to share your insights and to share your comments with the audience. I think it's going to prove really helpful to them. And again, this was Lee Marshall, the owner of Greased Wheel Virtual Assistants. And this is Sydney Craig Hart signing off from EA to VA.com. Have a great evening.